Every year, hundreds of thousands of foreign students come to the United States for college, with more than half of them coming from Asia. With their numbers surging, a new industry has sprung up in some East Asian countries, specializing in college prep. Some companies are helping students cram for the dreaded entrance exams, the SAT and the ACT. Others are assisting students with their applications. But some prep companies seem to be skirting the rules, even helping students game the system, from cheating on the SATs to ghostwriting applications. I'm Annie Waldman, and this week on ProPublica's podcast, we're speaking to Steve Stecklow, a journalist from Reuters, whose recent investigation uncovered systemic cheating within East Asia's college prep industry. Steve, thanks so much for joining us on our podcast today.
My pleasure.
So first, tell us a little bit about what sparked the investigation into the SAT in foreign countries.
There had been a number of stories in various media over the last, 2 years or so, that there had been a number of test cancellations and other issues, score delays, by students in Asia taking particularly the SAT. I read all the stories, and no one seemed to have gotten to the bottom of it. It was kind of like reading the effects, but not the cause. So I was very curious myself as to, why is this happening? You know, why is the College Board, which is the maker of the SAT, why is this going on? So that was kind of the genesis of it. It was trying to figure out what's going on.
SAT's cram school industry in East Asia plays a really important role throughout your entire series. How did this industry come about? Tell us a little more about it.
I would say the beginning really starts with the American colleges. You know, over the years, they've made a consistent effort to seek out students overseas who could pay what I would say is full freight, that don't require scholarship. And they tend to follow the money. So years ago, they would go to places like Kuwait and Saudi Arabia. And more recently, in the last 4 or 5 years, they've really homed in on China and South Korea and other parts of Asia. Now, as more and more students were being recruited, an entire industry sprang up, both in South Korea and particularly in China, of companies whose businesses helping kids get into top American colleges. Literally, it's like, I spoke with a woman who counsels students in one city near Shanghai, and she told me there were 50 companies alone in that one city that specialized in helping kids get into American colleges.
How easy is it to game the SATs?
As it happens, and if you've read our stories, it turns out it's not that difficult. The problem has been that the College Board recycles its tests. It gives them first in the United States, and then it gives those same tests or parts of the same tests later overseas, including Asia. And one of the issues is that American kids, as soon as they take the test in the States, often go online to websites such as College Confidential or Reddit, and they, apparently being nervous about how well they did or whether they got the answers right, they essentially, with their friends, recreate the test. They'll say, well, what did you get for this question? And what was your answer for that? And the websites, these stay up for a while. Sometimes they're taken down. But these Chinese companies are like monitoring this in real time, and they're harvesting this information. And then they're collecting it, and they're later compiling it into booklets, which they call jijings in China, that they give to their clients before they take the test. And they keep very careful track, and there's people in South Korea, we interviewed a guy who specialized in this, they keep very careful track of which tests have been given in the United States that haven't yet been given in Asia. And they then will sort of zero in on those tests. So the American kids who participate in this are actually helping the gaming of the test. There's also outright theft of tests. There have been tests that have leaked. In June, for example, the ACT was canceled in Hong Kong and all of South Korea because it turns out the test leaked shortly before it was to be administered. There's also examples of people who take pictures of the test booklet. You know, one of the things I managed to get, and one of my colleagues did, was photographs of a number of different tests that were later given, like days later, overseas.
Had these issues with the SAT been known by the College Board before the publication of your story?
Well, this is the thing. The answer to that is yes, although it had never come out before. You know, I'm working with two colleagues. They're fantastic. One is Renee Dudley in Boston and Alexandra Harney in Shanghai. And together, we were able to get all sorts of internal documents from the College Board. And what they showed was back in 2013, the College Board had its own problem with test leak, where it canceled the test in all of South Korea in May of 2013. And it was the first time ever in the history of the College Board that they had to cancel it for an entire country. And they did an internal analysis to figure out what to do about this problem. And we got hold of a PowerPoint presentation, an internal one for some of their top executives, which showed that they knew that a large number of their tests had leaked, in some cases on Chinese websites, in some cases in test prep centers in South Korea. And they opted to give them anyway. What their solution was, after doing a market analysis to see what it would cost to throw away the tests, they decided to simply not give the test where they knew it had leaked, but give that test in other countries, which, when you think about it, seems kind of ridiculous given the internet and that some of these tests were available online. So it doesn't matter what country you're in. That was a conscious decision they made after determining how many millions of dollars it would cost, which turned out to be not much, to come up with new tests. I think part of the problem was that they were already making plans to do a new SAT, which didn't debut until March of this year. So there may have been an issue with the number of tests. And these tests are very expensive to produce. They cost about $1 million, and they can take up to 2 years to produce a single one of them. So it's not so simple to get rid of, you know, half your tests and suddenly come up with new ones.
Part of your reporting came from these documents that you procured, but also part of it seems to have come from reviewing tons of test questions. You even had high school students review some of the test prep materials. How did you get them involved? What was that process like?
Part of it was the great work of Alex Harney, who managed to track down a number of Chinese students who now attend American colleges, some of whom went on the record admitting that they had seen tests in advance, the SAT questions in advance, and managed to do pretty well and get into some pretty good schools, like UCLA, for example. So part of it was that. In part two of our series, we managed to get hold of the brand new SAT about 2 weeks after it was administered in the United States. We got something like 40 pages of it. You know, again, there's an entire industry in Asia whose main purpose is getting their kids into these schools, and that can involve everything from showing them the test in advance to helping them write their essays, teacher recommendations, helping them procure fake transcripts, and all of that. And we wrote about that in our series as well.
You know, after reading the first couple parts of your investigation, I couldn't help but think, what happens to these students once they get on these college campuses after they cheat on the exam? Do they show up to school unprepared?
Well, I think there's a wide range. I mean, first of all, I don't want to say that every international student or every Chinese or Asian student cheats. They don't. I mean, that would be grossly unfair. And in fact, it's impossible to know how many do, because how would you know if someone saw a question in advance? I mean, it would be in their head. It's not like you'd catch them with something. And I think a lot of these kids are smart to begin with, so they may do perfectly fine. One student we wrote about who admitted that he'd seen the test in advance is doing fine. However, we also did part three of our series was about a cheating scandal that erupted this year at the University of Iowa, where literally dozens of Chinese students are under investigation for hiring imposters to take tests for them on campus. And it turns out there's another industry that's sprung up in China to help students who, once they arrive on campus, they're inundated with offers from companies in China offering to do everything from take tests for them to translate their homework assignments to do their homework for them. And in the case of University of Iowa, I think the investigation's still going on, but a number of students there are in danger of being expelled.
How did you first uncover the scandal that's going on at the University of Iowa?
I can't claim credit for that. I mean, it came out, but I think what we added to it is we actually interviewed some of the Chinese students who admitted to us that they had hired someone to take an online test for them. There were several tests involved, a macroeconomics course, a microeconomics course. They were caught because they use an outside company that does the online testing. And what it does is, it, as you're taking the test, it's taking a picture with your camera on your computer, and then they compare that to the picture of you on your student ID, and they found that they didn't match in a number of cases. I mean, literally, there's dozens of students who've been under investigation because of this. You know, we went to University of Iowa and interviewed a number of students, and that same story also got into the whole, I mean, the point of that story wasn't, it's not just once you arrive on campus. Literally, there can be fraud in the entire process from beginning to end, from first applying to an American university to showing up on campus and going there. We wrote about a student at UC Davis who, in his application, lied about what high school he went to. He had gone to a boarding school in Massachusetts. He didn't do very well there. His GPA was, I believe, 2.6, I think. So he dropped out, and then he managed to get a transcript from a high school in China claiming that he attended the exact same period of time when he was really in Massachusetts. The interesting thing about that particular case was that the college was actually told about this after the kid applied by a whistleblower. And I was able to get emails in the college showing they'd received this, they had read this email, but they didn't do anything about it. They never called the boarding school in Massachusetts, as the whistleblower strongly suggested they do. They accepted the kid. And it wasn't until I applied through public records request to get all these internal emails that they suddenly, for the first time, launched an investigation, called the Massachusetts school, and then ultimately expelled the kid. But the telling thing in that particular case to me was that UC Davis this year, for this current class that begins like now or next month, had 13,560 overseas applicants. And they had a grand total of 7 admissions officers reading those applications. So how these colleges are in a position to vet or do any due diligence is beyond me. And even when they're told of a case, they don't seem to have the time or wherewithal to pursue it.
Do you think that they're also somehow complicit in this cheating and have allowed it to persist?
I think it would be unfair to say they're complicit in the cheating, but I do feel they bear a responsibility, since if they weren't so actively recruiting these students, you know, sending their admissions officers overseas on a regular basis, you wouldn't have this problem. I mean, why are so many students all coming from a handful of countries? You know, they'll tell you it's for diversity, but how many of these students are being recruited in sub-Saharan Africa or places like that? I mean, they're really targeting China, South Korea, and some other countries like that. Now, again, I don't think they have anything to do with the cheating. The question, though, is what are they doing about it? And I think they're really struggling with that. I mean, again, another industry has sprung up of companies that are trying to make money off of this by offering to do interviews with Asian students overseas over Skype or interview them in the country and things like that. But I would say that, at least from what I've seen, with the huge numbers of applications that are coming in from overseas, because of the success of the recruitment efforts by the U.S. colleges, you know, I think they're overwhelmed.
Yeah, one industry that you spoke about was this application ghostwriting industry. I mean, how easy is it for schools to spot a ghostwritten application? Is this becoming a bigger issue for admissions offices?
You know, it's interesting that a lot of admissions officers privately will tell you they don't really trust the essays that overseas students write. The main reason they want to see them is because they want to see how well the kid can speak English, which, you know, would obviously be a factor in how well they succeed on campus. But the colleges also know that there are tests like the TOEFL test, where there is lots of reports of cheating on that. So they don't necessarily trust those scores, because they've had a lot of kids show up on campus and they can barely speak a word of English, even though they tested very well. So the essays are used in part just to determine their English speaking ability. But in the story that I wrote about one of these companies in this one case, it was in Shenzhen, which is on the mainland near Hong Kong, where these kids would, like, you know, the company had hired graduates of top American colleges to help these kids with the essays, and there'd be like 20 different versions of the essay, and you could tell from the editing marks that in some cases they were barely readable at all, and then by the end they're like perfect. And there's all sorts of talk of ghostwriters and where the kid doesn't write the essay at all. The other thing that I discovered was teacher recommendations. If you're an American student, you might ask your English or math teacher to write a recommendation for you. Well, generally, you never see the recommendation. You give the person a self-addressed envelope to send to the college, and you don't see it. That's not the way it seemed to work in some of these companies in China. I had evidence that the kids were writing their own teacher recommendations. For example, the company had in its possession, literally, I was able to obtain several hundred versions of their clients' teacher recommendations. First of all, why does the company have them? We called one of the teachers, and the person was shocked that that recommendation ended up with this company. And then those teacher recommendations were being edited, and not by the teacher. Again, it's a little more complicated because there are Chinese teachers are not used to writing teacher recommendations. So there's an issue with that. I was told, you know, it's difficult sometimes to get a teacher to do it. And there's also language issues. So if the teacher doesn't speak English, how is he going to write a recommendation? But there are ways around that, like, you know, get it translated and all that. But it does seem that in a number of cases with this particular company, but I'm told it's not uncommon at all, that the kids essentially write their own teacher recommendations. And in this particular company's case, the company was creating its own email addresses. So if the colleges had a question to ask, they wouldn't be writing to the teacher, they'd actually be writing to the company. So this is another sort of element of the fraud that's going on in what I would say is the gaming of U.S. college admissions process.
And another side of it is that, you know, the SAT was not the only exam to face issues of fraud. You also found issues with the ACT. I'm curious, tell us a little more about the Global Assessment Certificate Program. What exactly are they, and why do you think foreign students are gravitating towards that program? Why do they get those certificates?
This is something I was surprised to learn about because, you know, a lot's been written about the SAT. Virtually nothing had been written about the ACT. In part, that's because the SAT overseas is far more popular than the ACT. But that's not the case in the United States, where since 2012, the ACT has surpassed the SAT in popularity. But overseas, it's a completely different story. ACT is based in Iowa City, and it's a not-for-profit organization. But it turns out they own a for-profit organization that they purchased back in 2005, and it's technically registered in Hong Kong. And it mostly focuses on China and a handful of other Asian countries. And they offer a curriculum for kids where English isn't their first language. And it's not like going to high school. I mean, it's sort of in addition to that. It's a program that, you know, they tell you after, you know, 2 or 3 years of this, you'll be fully prepared to do well on an American campus. And the capstone of this program is taking the ACT at the end. And the other thing is they have agreements with over 60 American colleges to look at these kids' applications and in many cases offer college credit for completing these courses. What we found in interviewing students who had attended these and teachers who had worked in them was that there seemed to be all sorts of gaming of the ACT, where one kid told us how he'd been called in by an administrator at the school to practice on an exam, an ACT exam, a few days before the actual test. And then it turns out half the test was exactly the same as the one he received on test day. And there also seemed to be all sorts of cheating going on with the courses themselves. So as a result of that, ACT has since told us they're going to be auditing all 200 or so of their GAC centers, which again, most of them are in Asia. And the thing that was kind of shocking about this was this is a business for ACT. They make money off this. It's a multi-million dollar business. And the way it works is students who, it's essentially a franchise operation, kind of like Dunkin' Donuts. They have education centers pay for the right to offer this curriculum. They pay ACT's subsidiary the right to do that. They market themselves and they try to attract students by talking about how great their kids do on the ACT and what colleges they end up getting into and how they get college credit. So in a strange way, ACT actually profits if a kid cheats or doesn't cheat and does well, because it helps, you know, it brings in more revenue for the program. They receive license fees for every kid in every level of the curriculum that they take. And I think there's been some serious issues regarding the due diligence of some of these test centers that they've signed up. The other thing we found was that some of the education centers offering the GAC program also offer test prep on the side separately. So they're also taking money, offering courses for kids to teach them how to do better on the ACT. While at the same time, the GAC center is giving the ACT, and in the case of the ACT, they receive these test booklets in advance, often several weeks in advance. So the reason that this is supposedly a conflict of interest, and ACT told us this violated their policy, was because of the possible temptation of a GAC center to like show the test in advance to one of these other outside kids who's paying thousands of dollars for test prep. Again, ACT told us this violates their policy. We interviewed the head of their subsidiary in China, and he said he wasn't aware of this policy.
You already spoke a little bit about ACT's reaction, but what about the College Board? You know, what has been their general reaction to your entire series?
We know they're taking it seriously. I have to say that we've been a bit frustrated by what appears to be a case where the College Board is a membership organization. It's made up of colleges and high schools around the country. We've been a little surprised at the reluctance of colleges, for example, to take a stand and say something's wrong here, it needs to be fixed. I don't quite get it. And the College Board itself has basically, in some cases, they've cooperated with us. In other cases, they won't answer any questions. But they insist they take test security very seriously. In Renee Dudley's most recent part of the series, she managed to get hold of something like 400 new SAT questions for tests that haven't even been given yet, which shows a real security problem at the College Board. Both the ACT and the College Board have refused to let us interview their CEOs despite repeated requests. The ACT recently let go the head of its test security within weeks of my interviews with her and our story. But both organizations seem to be extremely non-transparent in their reactions to our findings.
You know, I'm curious about the challenges that you faced when you were pinning down the details of this story. Did you have language barriers? Were there issues in just confirming a lot of these test questions?
One of the great things about Reuters is we're global and we have boots on the ground everywhere and people speaking, you know, every language under the sun. I can't say that I speak Mandarin, but Alex Harney does. And when I needed help in South Korea, Jumin Park, who's from South Korea, helped me out. So that's one of the great things working for a global news organization, the resources we have. So language really hasn't been a problem. Yes, we've had to get lots of things translated. But, you know, I've been doing this a long time. And, you know, most investigations, I tend to approach them the exact same way. They often involve finding people and tracking down former employees and getting as many documents as possible and then vetting those documents. I mean, in some cases, we brought the documents to the College Board and said, we have these documents. Can you authenticate them? And they've been willing to do that. But it's no different from really any other documents.
Great. Well, Steve, thanks again for joining us on ProPublica's podcast. I really appreciate it.
It was a real pleasure. Thanks.
Thanks for listening to ProPublica's podcast, and stay tuned for another episode next week.